Damn it, Craig. There we go. I'll start it that way.
Craig. It's not a dinner dish. It's our guest. Bunny is the guest, not the dish. God damn it. All right, Jay, just start it.
Ah, geez, Craig. Okay. Anyway, we're the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. I'm Jay, joined with my co-host, Christopher, Christian, and Dan. Say hi, guys.
Hello there.
Just one day, man. Just say hi, guys. Like he's asked. It'd be great.
You got your one day.
You did.
You weren't there that day, though.
I wasn't there.
No, it happened.
All right, Christian, where can they find us on social medias?
You can find the Grumpy Dungeon Master podcast on Spotify. You can find it on Apple Podcast, and you can listen to it on YouTube. You can also find various Grumpy Dungeon Masters streaming on Twitch TV on Tuesday and Thursday evenings. Currently going through some Viking survival in Valheim. And at some point, sooner rather than later,
do we have delving to do this for the guest podcast too?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Delving deep into darkness to save the world from a cosmic horror that wishes to encroach and inflict its will upon the realms of that have been forgotten. Stay tuned for Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher's 5e D&D game, Waterdeep World Born Dead. If you like what you hear from us, if you like what you see on our Twitch streams, give us a like, subscribe, leave a comment.
That intro, for his game, it grows every week.
You got a lot to live up to, Chris.
Someday he'll get to run it again.
One day.
We have guests today, so...
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
No, you do it. I'm well,
all right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fine. Hi, guys. We have guests. Introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Zane.
I was waiting for him to say more. Hi, I'm Bunny.
Hi, Bunny.
Hello.
That's it. All right.
Do you want my life story?
I mean, as much as you're willing to tell. No. I did just. So we went to GaryCon this past year, and we were, the ceremony for Gygax? What was that called again?
It was the Gygax Memorial ceremony sort of after. It was the groundbreaking for the Gygax Memorial, and then followed by the sort of, reception at the Geneva Lake Museum.
So while we were there, you know, we were trying to see if there were people that we could start talking to, and Dan here just like, hey, I think I know that lady over there. It's the dungeon damsel. We should get her on the podcast. And I was like, okay, cool. Why don't you go talk to her? And he's like, all right, I'll get on that. And then happened.
Listen, you were talking to somebody else. And then when I turned around after talking to somebody else myself, you weren't there anymore. I'm like, okay, Chris, we got to find her again. And then I never saw you again, but Chris apparently did, and apparently had you sign his yearbook, thankfully.
I was probably cold, and I went and hid in my car with the heat on.
That first day was pretty bitterly cold.
Oh, yes.
Zane, did you go to that as well?
I did, and I was just thinking about that. I walked up, and I gave my little speech, you know, because that's what everybody did, is they put their token into the little hole there. I gave the digging hole, like they dug the first hole to start the thing.
The groundbreaking.
The groundbreaking. They ground broke with a hole. And so I told the story about how I had a friend of the family who introduced me to D&D when I was young. I was in the like late 70s, early 80s with the red box set, basic
set. Yes. Yeah, man.
Yep. And I, you know, kind of dedicated it because he's no longer with us. So I kind of dedicated that to him too. So that was my speech.
We missed the groundbreaking. We
did not get the email from Paul Stormberg until we long since booked the flight, and our flight basically came in an hour before the groundbreaking. We're like, we're not going to make it. But we did ship our dice to be interred to Paul, and he brought those, I guess, from... Does he live in Nebraska or North Dakota? Either way, he brought them and put them in the ground for us. So there's some Grumpy Dungeon Master dice in the ground at the Gygax Memorial.
Yeah, our Dungeon Damsel Unnatural Selection dice are also gracing the ground.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they have that installed by the time we get up there next year. That'd be great to go roll dice on that table.
Yeah, it would be cool.
Got to roll them in Gary's hand.
Oh, yeah.
And so I guess, how'd you guys enjoy GaryCon? We have part one of our, you know, like recap episode came out last week, and part two come out the following week after this podcast comes out. What did you guys think of the whole experience this year?
The experience was actually pretty amazing. I got to see a lot of old friends and make a lot of new ones. It's always amazing. I mean, it's just, I think GaryCon is always amazing. And, you know, when you're surrounded by a whole bunch of nerds, you're kind of in your element. And so no one's judging you for being super
nerdy. Whatever
the
heck weird you are. Yeah. Yeah. It was fun for us too, because, you know, this was our third time. So the first time we went there, nobody knew who we were. The second time we went there, Unnatural Selection had come out. And so a couple of people were like, oh, it's the Dungeon Damsel. You know, we had a couple of people walk up and talk to us, which was really cool. And then this time it was, you know, way more than that, just because of Droskara, most likely. Lots of people coming up and congratulating us and being very friendly. And so it was a lot of fun from that aspect to be able to meet even more people, because they were all very willing to come up and introduce themselves, which was great.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, speaking of, your backer kit, not Kickstarter. Congratulations. You guys are up, 22 times what you were looking for in order to make this, backer kit.
Right.
Off. So, that's pretty awesome. You guys want to dive right in and tell us about, Droskara?
I'd love
to hear about it from y'all's mouths.
Right. Okay. Well, this was a concept that I'd been working on, well, I would say almost since childhood, really, because when I first played in a friend's campaign, he kind of did some of the things that Droskara does. So one of my favorite aspects that he introduced to me was the idea that there would be a living world. So the world wasn't frozen waiting for me to get there. Everything was going on. There were events that were scheduled. There was random things that were happening. And so I could choose to get involved in those things, or I could choose not to get involved in those things. And the world would change whether I wanted it to or not. And it could change based on how I interplayed with it. So that kind of concept I'd been working on for a long time. And so when we found out about Shadow Dark, it was an obvious placement for that world, which we had started a couple of years prior in Basic Fantasy. So Droskara is a complete campaign setting for Shadow Dark. And in that, I mean, you wouldn't have to invent anything on your own if you didn't want to. So you start off, you read a couple of pages, it shows you, hey, these are some starting locations, you could start a party. You go to that page and you can start the party. And everything's there, not a lot of reading involved, you can get everybody into it. So that's really important to me, because why have a setting where it just kind of gives you a few ideas and then you go, oh my gosh, I still have to prep as though I had made the setting myself. So that was really important to me. But the actual elements of Droskara are the sun is blotted out by something, the clouds, darkness, and the Shadow Dark has invaded even the surface world. And so your mission is to do whatever the heck you want to, because this is a sandbox, open however you want to go about it. There's lots of factions that are all vying for power and control, and especially more so now because the world is moving towards some sort of an apocalyptic state, because nobody, you know, food is hard to come by and so on and so forth. So there are the main method by which you might gain some control over this situation is through 7 core crystals that are massively powerful, but they also have massive consequences when using them. So you've got to really think about it, and the each of the crystals kind of interplay in very interesting ways. So you might need two of them in order to not kill yourself by using one of them. Lots of different fun options. So that's kind of our overall thing with it, is you can choose to try to be a hero of the land. You can choose to try to be an evil part of the land. And what you do can affect the entire world, and or the world will continue to evolve whether you're involved or not.
So how do you get that aspect of the world always like churning around and doing its own thing onto the paper, other than just like having a bunch of like random tables and random events always happening by the DM before play starts?
Yeah, there, what it is, yes, it is a bunch of random tables, and each of the factions kind of has their own missions and goals. So even though it's random tables, you can also choose things that make sense. And okay. One of the things that those random tables also shows is this is going to take X number of sessions/weeks to happen. So you go, oh, okay, this faction is going to attack this other faction in 4 sessions/weeks. And I'll explain the difference between those two in a moment. But if you decide, you know, if you go, yeah, that sounds like a good one, I'm going to go ahead and add that in. Now you've got kind of a logbook of all these events that are going to occur before they do. And what I discovered while doing all that was this amazing thing where if you go to an oracle or a seer, they actually can predict the future, right? Like they can say, oh, you know, I see darkness going toward this, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you can interpret that in fun ways. So that really made it way cooler, because now I don't know how much you guys have played Shadow Dark, but there's an awful lot of that sort of thing in Shadow Dark. There's a lot of spells that are predictive in nature. And so it really plays well with that.
I like what you're saying here, because there's been a concept in kind of old school gaming for a while that the world should not be static, that it should. And there was often a thing that they would call the faction turn or the dungeon turn. And that is, you know, once players have done their things, you know, then it is the DM, you know, takes his turn. And it's not, you know, if it's not in combat, it's not monsters and stuff, but it is, okay, well, you guys have done an adventure, but what have the different groups and factions, how have they progressed towards their goal? And this sounds like it is doing a lot of that lifting for you by providing you kind of some of the things that they could be doing and timelines for those things, instead of you having to come up with all of that on your own.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely the idea. And by having it all there, then there's so much you can do with that. So another thing that's really cool is again, familiarity with Shadow Dark important, but carousing. Are you guys familiar with carousing in Shadow Dark?
We're all very familiar with Shadow Dark, and we have to assume our listeners are also. Otherwise,
okay.
Yeah, we've talked about it enough, so they should at least know the basics.
Okay, great. So yeah, so with the carousing charts, they're really interesting, because you know, a basic carousing chart in the rule book is great for any generic situation, and then the new carousing rules in Western Reaches are really cool and very much expanding on that. But one of the things that we decided to do was have carousing tables based on location, so and that can tie into lore, and that's one of the ways we use to help the players learn the lore or even the current situations. So you could have a carousing chart that gives you, hey, this is going to give you this amount of XP and this little piece of information, and then also it'll say reference your logbook on this and such and such and such. So you can start to tie that stuff in, and there's hooks to be able to do that.
Awesome.
I love that. I think carousing tables are one of those great things that get better when you make your own or have them specific to the place or the setting or the world that it's taking place in. So
I love carousing tables. I encouraged him to make a lot of carousing tables for sure. And we're kind of trying to introduce somewhat of a new way of carousing. Like, I don't want to get too into detail with it because we haven't quite figured out the kinks of it yet, but we're trying to do like negative carousing, right? Like if you're evil, like what might happen, you know?
Oh, I like that idea.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm up for an evil carousing table.
For sure.
I've definitely seen some other people do some riff on the kind of carousing table with like a charity table. If you're like a priest and wants to do like charitable works, there's
that's interesting.
Instead of doing carousing, if you're the kind of person that wouldn't go carousing, you do this. Yeah. And so you go out and do charitable works. It's the same thing. You roll the table, you get some XP, and you have some sort of interesting encounter with individuals, or you learn something, or you get something, or something happens to you. But I think all of those are great ways to build in world building and tie characters to something without a player having to like read, you know, 70 pages worth of lore and try to remember.
They just get stuff
as they adventure, as they explore, you learn things as your character does, and it's great.
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah, so in Unnatural Selection, which was our first book, we did introduce a completely different type of carousing, which we called ceremonies, because you worked with a shaman and you went on a plant medicine binge, and during that plant medicine binge, you would discover, you know, secrets to the universe, or you would change your deity to a nature-based deity, or any number of things. So, you know, that was our first foray into playing with the carousing charts.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things I really enjoyed about Unnatural Selection, was that of new ways of carousing are very interesting, and it really fits in with the lore of what's going on.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely better than snorting a bunch of ash and turning into a crocodile.
I mean, that sounds kind of fun.
You got to bring it up every single episode.
Listen, it was a lot of fun. But I mean, some of the ceremonial outcomes, I guess you could still think you're a crocodile. I mean, roll one on the D8, you're possessed and you have disadvantage on all checks until the curse is extracted. I mean, or your mind was nearly erased. I mean, possibly work in maybe thinking you're a crocodile and biting a party member. Cool. That's hard to know.
Yep.
No, I like the living world aspect of Iskara that you guys are describing. It's definitely not a new idea, but it's definitely a great way that you guys are doing it, kind of implementing it, so you have a random chart, or if, you know, if there's something that makes sense for what the party's been doing to respond, the factions are doing X, Y, or Z. And it reminds me kind of, to the top of my mind here, of course, because a friend of ours has been running an old school style Greyhawk game, but he's been running it in 5th edition. But he's running the transition from 1st edition Greyhawk to 2nd transition Greyhawk, where it's called the Greyhawk Wars. And like every faction in Greyhawk is doing something, no matter what the party is doing. And of course, the factions end up responding to what the parties end up doing based upon, you know, what quests they complete or ignore. And obviously, you can't do everything. You can't be everywhere at once. So the world will continue along without you, no matter what you do. And I really like bringing this old school, 40-year-old concept at this point, to Shadowdark, which is just, it's my favorite system right now, just because it's old school gaming, but with clear, modern mechanics that makes it feel light and still just has the grittiness of the old feel of playing in your mom's basement when you were 10.
Right. And there's a lot of, there were some people, especially earlier on, I don't think it's maybe true anymore, but originally people were like, well, this is just a dungeon crawler and it's not a full, campaign system, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I absolutely not. That's a kind of a short-sighted way to look at it. It's up to the DM. If the DM wants to make just a dungeon crawler, then fine. You know, you can do that, but it is very possible and very flexible to create entire campaign worlds, which is another kind of motivator to doing this. Is not just to do it because I had three parties that all wanted to run in the same world simultaneously, but also to say, hey, this is how you could do it, and you don't check that off of your list of the things that you could complain about, because it's no longer relevant.
right?
Yeah, it seems like a fun way. Like, you could play in, you know, the world of Draskara, like, you know, campaign after campaign, and everyone could go very differently depending on, you know, what things, where people go, what decisions they make, what things they interact with. And I love that there's that, you know, it won't feel the same. It won't be the same story. It will keep changing because they will inevitably do different things, or, you know, the factions will make different moves to respond to those things. So it will always feel different and alive. That's great.
Is there an easy way to track the movement of the living world?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've created kind of a logbook. So that's one of the extras that you can get with the higher tiers. And the logbook, sure, it's going to have just, you know, blank lines so you can fill in what's going on. But it's also going to have tables and checkboxes and so forth. You can say, okay, so this particular faction has gained control of this particular core crystal. Check, you know, the list of the core crystals is there and the checkboxes are there. And then you can always reference where everything is. Because, you know, it was interesting because for me, I don't really like to... I forget stuff. How about that? I tend to forget things, right?
Right.
When I was first creating it and doing everything, I was forgetting where everything was. Oh, where is this crystal? Where is that crystal? And so I created that logbook for myself to help myself keep track of it. But then what I discovered is after a little while, I no longer even needed it because I started to learn it really well and I knew it. And I think that's because I was putting it in the logbook, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because it was forcing me to sit down, think about it, check mark whatever, write whatever. And then I needed it less and less because I was able to keep it all in my head, which was a kind of a surprise result. And the other thing that because I have a bad memory, I kind of created the world, the names of everything with that in mind. Because I don't like systems where, or I'm sorry, campaign settings where the name is Electric Jockey and with all a bunch of apostrophes and things. And you're just like, I have no idea how to pronounce that. I'm never going to remember that. I have to call it Icky Face or something stupid so that I can remember what it is. So it was really important in this, in creating this, was creating names that were, one, memorable, and two, easy to pronounce and easy to get, like, right away. Oh, Borfrost. Okay, that's where the frost giants are. Easy. Next, you know. And so what I've noticed when I'm playing with these three groups is that everybody remembers everything. I don't have to remind them of stuff. They know exactly what's going on. They know where this thing was. They know what that city is. And that's blown me away.
Actually, yeah, it's been pretty amazing. And it's been like months since we played with our Friday group. When we just played with our Friday group this past Friday, and they just knew everything. I'm like, wow, we don't know anything, and you guys remember everything. It was amazing.
As a guy who I own a T-shirt that literally says I roll dice and forget things. So I need something to keep track of stuff like that. So a logbook seems like a good idea.
Yeah, I just forget names, man. Names are the worst for me. Like, unless someone has a unique name and like a unique face, I'm not gonna remember anything about them.
I found that I always end up playing with a couple of jokesters, and if I give somebody a really cool sounding name, or somebody that has a name with a freaking apostrophe, or something sounds a little like Scandinavian or some shit like that, they're just going to call him Jeff or Steve or some shit like that just to, like, take away, like, yeah, this big, bad, evil, you know, guy that just killed, like, this entire city. He's like, oh, you mean Jeff over there? Yeah, we're going to go punk that guy. It's like, God damn it, guys.
I literally went through that today. I was running my DCC Thracia game, and they were talking to the Lich, the Immortal King, and they kept calling him all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah, well, the big guy over there, you know, Chief, whatever the guy's name is, that's something with an apostrophe, Xander Frost or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah,
there's a grumpy story for
you. But yeah, that's awesome. I will admit that after I had been following y'all's BackerKit since before GaryCon, but then after Chris actually managed to get you guys on the interview, I went ahead and just and backed it. I'd been waiting to bite the bullet, but just because, I mean, I usually, you know, anything that's Shadow Dark related that looks even remotely good, I usually end up backing, frankly. And sometimes I'm disappointed, but usually I'm not. But usually it's a zine or something like that. But I was reluctant at first because I was like, wow, like, you guys have produced almost the same amount of what I'm getting promised from Kelsey for the Western Reaches. Do I want to back this while I run this? And then I'm like, I don't know, it sounds pretty dark and spooky, and I like that. Sun getting blown out from the sky, I like that. I'm like, okay, this feels very Ravenloft to me, and I like Ravenloft. Hold on a second. And I kept on delving a little further into it. And I don't know if you guys had the inspiration from that, but or sort of the grimdark aspect of something like that, but I know, it's right up my alley. I might not completely run it exactly the way you guys write it, but whoever does. Mean,
no, you are a DM. You can run it the way you want to. I mean, we just have the rules and the setting for you to pretty much utilize your own imagination to make it, if you want to make it better or have it the same or whatever
better.
You want to do with it. Well,
how could
I know.
Be better?
How could it be better? Yeah, exactly.
I know. When I said that, I was like, poop.
And you had me sold four crystals as a Final Fantasy nerd when I was growing up. Anything with crystals that you have to go rescue from somebody, and you know, I'm all for that. Like, I try to get my current campaign to kind of revolve into that. I was like, no, that's stupid. I should do something bigger and better. And I was like, nah, I should have done the crystal idea. I really should have.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. It is the highlight of the thing. Like, you know, when I run one shots, I have to have at least two crystals involved in the one shots because the power dynamics are so interesting. Where one party member has one crystal and one has another, and they're kind of opposed, and so they're dealing with the fallout, the challenges that those crystals provide, and then, you know, you can use one to help the other guy, or you can use one to mess up the other guy. I mean, it always turns out fun, and I do a random choice at the very beginning as to who's going to have what crystal. So it's totally random every time we do the one-off. So they always turn out completely differently based on just those two little elements. So that it's amazing for a full campaign.
Yeah, I think that's why I backed the Sky Raiders of Abraxia. Is that what it was called?
Sky Raiders of Abarax.
Yeah, whatever. It took so long to get it delivered, I forgot that I even had backed it.
Oh, no.
That happens with a lot of things, actually.
Yeah, it was a rough one, unfortunately.
Yeah. But I do want to say, though, is that, you know, I just got a chance to look through your guys' BackerKit in the past couple of days, and I will have to say the art you guys have for this book is totally top-notch.
I think that's actually what sealed the deal when I ended up clicking. Okay, I got to back this. Like that, it's Shadow Dark art, and then honestly, the red blood on all the maps and shit is just like, okay, that it's just thematic and looks really fucking great. So
that was my idea.
Mad props to y'all and your artists for pulling that off. I mean, even the sample maps you guys have in your sample that you put out are phenomenal. So
I think that's Talik's art too. He is amazing at maps. I mean, honestly, all of our artists, we absolutely love every single one of them. Like, they're amazing. And a lot of them are actually metal artists who do metal art covers for
I feel that in these images.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I need to throw up devil horns for half of this. And
Yeah,
for sure.
I'm holding mine up right now.
Like, we all are.
Go ahead. I had bought the, the Shadow Sun book off of...
Dark Sun, right?
Yeah, Dark Sun.
Exactly.
There's no art. Like,
what?
There's a couple pieces here and there scattered throughout. And the art is fine. Like, it's decent, but it's just an empty book. And
interesting.
Better than coming AI art, I guess.
Better than AI art, I guess. Yeah. But the same time, like half of what sells Dark Sun is the art, and like none of it's
more than a half. Yeah. I mean, quite honestly, Brom sold Dark Sun to me when I first saw it. I mean, Troy Denning's writing's great, but art's really what sells it.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time on here. If you want to sell a role-playing game or something, great art. That is the beginning point.
For sure.
And if you want me not to buy a role-playing game, you put AI art slop for on the, sure. on the cover. I'm like, give me a break. Come on. I can't.
We are extremely adamant about that. We are extremely adamant that we do not support AI and...
Yeah, even when other people want us to, like, you know, oh, we'll promote your stuff, and can you promote our stuff?
No,
like,
it's a no.
Well, let me look at your stuff.
Yeah. They have to pay artists just like us. Like, we support the community because it's tough being an artist when there's a lot of AI art going around, and, you know, you pretty much can just get replaced for a freaking monthly fee, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
So we really like to pay our people. We really enjoy it. I mean, it costs an arm and a leg, but we don't care.
I mean, it shows in the quality of your product, because it looks incredible. Like this, and I love that it looks like Shattered Ark, but it has its own style. Like you're not
definitely
a different vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're. I mean, I think Shattered Ark is pretty metal, but I think like we. Accidentally went even more metal than that.
If Shattered Ark's metal, you guys are death metal. You're like
yeah,
metal,
right.
Is what the vibe I'm getting from this.
Yep.
And speaking of Norwegian death metal, you guys are familiar with Morkborg, right?
Oh yeah.
So, talking about just AI art, you know, really nice art that's been you guys have hired artists for. What do you guys think about using the use of public domain art? Because a lot of the Morkborg creators tend up using public domain art from, like, I don't know, the 18th century, 19th century, and then kind of putting their own little spin on it. And sometimes it comes off really well. Like Luke from Limithron ends up putting some of this stuff for Pyreborg is like public domain art of, like, you know, a French sailor or something like that. Then he puts his own sort of bloody, you know, undeady spin on it or something like that. You guys ever see anything like that that you actually appreciate, or is it in the same realm as using like AI art? It's like it's just lazy because you didn't hire artists. Sort of
this is something we haven't discussed.
This is not something that I've actually come across, but I mean, there have been people that, you know, tell us that we could use their stock art, but, like, you know, we'd rather get our own pieces. That's just our personal preference, because, you know, there's a limitation to having stock art, and it's not, you know, 100% what you're looking for. So you kind of have to fit whatever you're making to the stock art, which I don't know is all that great. But we are familiar with Morkborg and the Pirate Borg, but we don't necessarily 100% like, we haven't looked through the books because, I mean, we just purchased it at GaryCon. We still haven't looked through it yet. So it's still kind of new to us. So okay. I'm not aware of that usage.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they had done that, but, you know, I probably would never.
Real,
I probably though. Wouldn't do it. I probably wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't do it, but it's real, right? Like, it's real art.
Yeah, it is real art.
Yeah, it is all real art. And some of it is actually, like, just I have Luke Stratton's book right in front of me, and, like, in the very front of it, it says, with public domain images directly from the British Library and the Rijksmuseum, basically all of their pirate-based images, and, like, and I will say honestly that Luke is a fantastic artist. Like, he is an incredible graphic designer, and he laid out this book phenomenally. But you can also tell which are the public domain pieces of art that he used, and then kind of put his own backgrounds on and put a different silhouette on it, and then made it his own. But it's just a kind of an interesting mix and match. It's almost like a collage of images.
Yeah, I think he pulls it off well, though, because he is an artist.
Because
he's
an artist,
that
yes.
artist eye, yeah. And so he knows, and he's incorporating it into the style of what he wants that look. Now, I do see people that just throw stock art or public domain art in a book just to have art without doing anything, or they're just like, yeah, that's close enough, and that's kind of what it looks like. Somebody just was like, well, I need some filler.
Yep.
Right. And meanwhile, we're very on top of that. Like, oh, this guy has this type of horn on his head. Like, not that. Right. Like, we're very specific. Sometimes our artists are, I'm sure, they're rolling their eyes on their side. Like, come on. Like, this isn't that.
Oh, yeah.
But for us, it is.
Well, I had a chance to work with Orthane, the Keshinar folks, on their book. And when they were dealing with some of the artists, one of the more famous issues they had was the artist had drawn like a bunch of fruit, specifically tomatoes, in one of the photos.
Oh my God.
And part of their whole setting is being as, you know, true to Egypt as possible. Well, tomatoes didn't exist back then, nor did most fruits. And they
got there.
big argument with the artist about that. It's like, but yeah, like you got to go that way. But yeah, your guys' art is fantastic. And like, I just on the art alone, I would back this book, you know, just to have it on the shelf.
If I had the money to spare, I'd back your special edition version too. It's like, I just upgraded to the special edition of Western Reaches. And I'm like, I can't do both. My RPG budget is so blown for the month.
I have an argument for that.
Oh, here we go.
We do have pay over time. It's spread out over four. Bam! It's spread out over 4 months. You pay.
We'll never notice.
I'm just saying it's spread out over 4 months. So
she might.
There you go.
Nah. She will.
Since you can spread it out over 4 months, you can get the the 2000
ultimate edition. Ultimate for sure. Yeah. Go for the ultimate edition.
Might as well.
Yeah.
I mean, hold on a second. Let me go back and look at that.
Yeah, temples and tombs. It's amazing. Are you saying you don't have a credit card that your wife doesn't know about?
Whoa.
I am.
I
saying
don't want to be a part of this.
Yeah. I'm telling
on you.
Listen. Apparently she has hers. Jesus. I have mine.
That is not a secret I can protect.
Then she knows about.
I have 17 credit cards.
Oh God, that's so many.
Are you using a credit card to pay off your other credit cards? What are you doing?
Yeah, that's,
we have like two, and I feel bad that we have two.
$30,000 in a month, and the bill is only $80, guys. I don't know what's wrong with you.
Oh my God,
that's actually amazing. Sign me up.
But yeah. What's the you talked a lot about Duskara and damn, I don't know what I just said there. You've talked a lot about Duskara and everything. What was your favorite part about, you know, writing for it, other than, you know, what we kind of talked about already? What was like a cool location or something that you felt like you got a chance to finally like bring into existence and add to the book?
Putting
Hold
you on the
second.
Spot here.
Don't well, worry. I'll start.
Yeah,
I do. Just now. Tell me things. Right.
I'm a designer and I help figure out the artwork and I help our artists figure out what they're doing sometimes. And I do a lot of design internally and sometimes externally and whatever else. Like I'm that kind of face and that. So I play in his games to play test, right? And so he doesn't tell me everything, but it's been fun for me to act. Okay, you know what? I do have a favorite though that, you know, I haven't seen it come to life because I've had some ideas, but it's the Fae. The Fae Forest. I do enjoy the Fae Forest, even though I hate the Fae Forest. Does that make any sense? You should explain why I hate and love the Fae Forest.
Oh, I got to hear this story.
All right.
For sure.
Well, I mean, I like what I kind of modeled the Fae Forest after is essentially a bad trip, right? So your sense of time is all screwed up. Your sense of you know, understanding locations and understanding each other, you know, everything's kind of messed up in there. So and all kinds of dumb, crazy stuff happens all the time, you know, to these parties when they delve into it. And I put my Fae in the main world. Like, you don't go to another plane of existence. The Fae Forest splits the continent. So on one half of the continent, the only way to get to the other half of the continent is you have to go through the Fae Forest. So there's a lot of ridiculous Fae things that are going on. And, you know, for instance, there's a bug I just nicknamed the Looper Bug, and it's the Groundhog Day bug. If you get bit by it, then you have 24 hours to find the antidote. Otherwise, you reset at the same spot you were bit by it.
That's awesome. It's like that deer tick bug we have down here in South Carolina.
You have to experience it for sure.
So yeah. So what's really great is that my main group figured out how to use it to their advantage. So they got and captured one of these bugs, and then they went into the most dangerous area in the entire game, the Cape Black, which is an underground.
Just kept on trying it until
ocean
it got
on
right.
An underground city, or an underground city on an underground ocean. Yeah. So they would go in TPK. But they had been bitten by the bug, so they reset. They go in, they try something else. TPK, okay, that didn't work. Let's try this. Okay, make sure we don't do that. But the greatest part is that only one the person who's bit, they're the only ones who knows what happens. So everybody else has no idea. They have to role play that they don't remember anything. So then they have to go back in, and if they forget, the one person who is bit forgets to tell them something, then they end up doing the same stupid thing again, and then hell breaks.
So rather than Groundhog Day, it's really Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, it's Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to say this
live
is
by repeat.
This is Days of Futures Past with extra steps.
So every time the one person that got bit gets reset, I guess. Does he have to explain everything to everybody? Kind of like,
I make him do
explaining
it.
Explaining everything to Emily Blunt every time.
Oh, you know what? Those are the funniest moments. Everyone is dying laughing when their guy is trying to remember everything, right? It works. And you know, we do that one. That one's live streamed on our YouTube channel. So if you wanted to see
that
happen, then it happens multiple times in there.
Oh my God, it drives me bananas.
Fantastic.
So that's just one little small part of the Fae Forest. I think major overall thing that I love about it is something we did together, really.
At the very beginning, we
came up with the major cities, and the major cities are massive. They're fantastical. They're really interesting and different. Like, we have a city that is inside of a mile wide tree. And it's filled with clockwork elves. So it's all clockwork. It's perpetual motion machines, things like that. Then we have another city that is that city on the underground sea, for instance. And ones that are just built right into a cliff face what's another? Oh, the Shining City is one of my favorites because it is completely pristine at all times, and anybody who litters is going to be murdered on the streets, so we wanted to have really fantastical and interesting places, so you wouldn't just go, okay, well, we're in this city, why should we even go to this other city? Like, who cares? It's just another city. No, it's really unique and different.
Yeah, very cool. You get your players wanting to explore when they start seeing stuff like that. They have to go see the world. They become adventurers.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You want to create the seven wonders, so they got to go find them all.
Yeah. Yeah, they're Pokemons.
Okay. Can I just say, I'm really delving deep into y'all's backer kit right now, and I love the fact that you guys have a meet the artist section and list out all the artists working on this and a little sample of their work. So if I want to go find them art station or something like that, I can go find them and see what other stuff they've worked on, or hell, I can hire them for something I want to write.
Right.
I mean, like, and they all have a very distinct and different style. But yeah,
there's cohesion to them too, which is kind of amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So some people look a little more like gritty and rough than others, and some look like for black and white drawing very polished. It's like comparing like Errol Otis to like Larry Elmore if they're both doing black and white and a couple of these guys. So yeah, I really appreciate seeing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we want to promote them too. They're a big part of what makes this awesome. So, and there's nothing more fun than getting a new piece of art in my email box. Like,
oh, for sure.
Look at this thing come to life.
Yeah, every day you get that, it's Christmas. It's awesome.
It is like Christmas. It really is.
Well, I see you guys just, recently passed your stretch goal to add a zine to all these books.
Oh no, that's Christian's
favorite
word.
Free with the ultimate edition. Yes. Wink, wink. Free with the because you want it. You want that. It's free with the essentials too. And the thing with like all the stuff, all like the special edition and the, what is it? Is it the Accord, the Essential Core Edition? Is that what has all the stuff in it? Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah, it comes free with all of those because, you know, it makes sense to add an extra thing in with your things, right?
Yeah. The thing with the thing. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, more stuff with your stuff. Yeah.
So what
anything
is
you guys want to? Yeah, what is the Umbral Caldera?
All right. Well, so this was an area of the map. It's great because I had this originally planned, and the world map had this particular island that is a volcano island and ruled by a hydra and, you know, dinosaurs and just cool monster stuff on there. And then as I was predicting how long this book was going to be, I was working out all the page counts and everything. And I just went, oh my gosh, this is just too much. I said, we can't print books that are this thick.
Yeah.
Just, you know, from a printing standpoint, not even from a creation standpoint, but I thought that's just too much. So I just erased that island. And then we said, well, you know, we could make it a zine. Then it's not packed into the same book, right? Then now it can be a separate thing. So we decided to do it that way.
That sounds very similar to the conversation that I had with David Haddon when I was helping him with Keshnar. I was looking at the original manuscript. It was like, oh, it's going to be 300 pages. And I was like, it's 300 pages now, man, without art. Yeah. When you add in the art.
Oh, and oh yeah, that's going to shove that.
The final book was it 512 pages? So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it was like the size of a Pathfinder Corp rule book.
Encyclopedia. Yeah, we recently got our Crooked Moon, you know, back Kickstarters in, and that book is 600 pages or so. It's great campaign and all, but very unwieldy. Like, that should have been two or three books.
Listen, right. I don't care if it's a large book. I don't care. Just add a little ribbon. Add multiple ribbons, and I'll be happy.
Right. Yeah.
We were originally going to do a singular book, and then I was like, oh, this is just too much stuff. We have to do more than one book. And then it was, at some point, I think, three books, and I'm like, well, you know, if we're going to do this, we need to split this one off.
Yeah, one of the things that came up was, how are we going to do Unnatural Selection now?
True.
Because Unnatural Selection is all part of this. I mean, it was the precursor to this. I mean, it was part of Droskara before we even had Droskara available to people, right? So, because I had been working on it in the background. So see, what's interesting about Unnatural Selection is it has all the classes, the, you know, the spells, the ancestries and some extra gear and stuff, but then it also had new monsters, a bunch of animals that weren't in the core rules, and magic items and things. And I went, okay, well, we're gonna have new classes again, we're gonna have new magic items, we're gonna have certainly lots of new monsters. So do we want to reprint Unnatural Selection and make a part of this? And then we have to create another book that's similar to Unnatural Selection, which includes classes and monsters and this kind of mix. And I just went, that's not going to work. I want it to be one book has all the classes and the spells and so forth, and the other book has all the monsters and the magic items. So that's what ended up happening, is we took all of Unnatural Selection and added it, kind of sprinkled it into all of Droskara.
Okay.
Yep.
What you're saying is I don't have to buy Unnatural Selection now. I can just buy Droskara.
It is correct.
No.
The answer is no. The right answer is no.
From the content standpoint, that's true. Well, if you want to be a completionist, then you want to get it. Well,
if you love us.
Yeah.
If you want to support third party.
Listen, you're not gonna get all the deets for Unnatural Selection. You know, in the Droskara reveal until you actually get those books, but you can get
Natural Selection. Oh yeah, it's gonna be at least a year probably.
Yeah. So yeah, you've gotta go and get it.
There you go. Yeah, I like that
approach. Well, and whatever you know, if you do buy it, that money goes directly to our artists for the most part. I mean, that's, you know,
and us to make the other thing happen.
And my cats, because I rescue them.
Yeah.
Oh, do you like kitty cats?
Yeah. I do like kitty cats.
Yay, I have six. Help.
Wow.
I'm down to three. I'm down to three.
I'm at three, and that is max cat for me.
My mom's got five, and I've got one. So
you can't have an odd number of cats, Christian. You have to have even.
You have to round it off.
Yeah, two cats is the same as one. Four is the same as three.
Three is the right number because two of them sit in my lap and the other one sits in the only free space on my desk. So,
yeah, he wants to sit in your lap.
Yeah. Yeah, my lap. Yeah, so he does. Cute.
They kind of rotate out.
Listen, if you had four cats, you'd have one for each leg and then one for each arm. And then you could just.
For sure. Them
yeah.
Yeah.
If you have six cats, you have one for each shoulder, and then the arms, and then the legs, you know, and then possibly your body. Like, I don't know. When you lay down, you have a pile of cats on top of you. That's all I know.
That's called bliss. It's called bliss.
It is bliss. I love them so much.
Until they all start making biscuits at the same time.
That's ultra bliss.
It is ultra bliss.
They can make biscuits at the same time. So you just got to clip those cat's nails. People just don't get that. Like, you don't let the cats.
Oh, I clip them, yeah.
Yeah, you got to clip them, like, every couple of weeks. As soon as they start making puncture marks on your skin, that's time.
They start tearing you apart.
I like the love wounds. It's fine.
Murder biscuits.
I call that acupuncture, and it's very relaxing.
Yeah, it's very relaxing acupuncture by cat needles.
Yeah, catupuncture.
Wow.
Poor Zane. He was thrown into having cats.
Hey, there are worse fates, man. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I grew up with no animals at all, so I had to learn how to do all that. But it's been great.
Yeah, my cat came here a little bit late for the podcast, but he's asleep now. I'm hoping he starts snoring soon.
Yeah.
Hello, kitty.
Every other podcast, I have to cut us off and tell Chris that we hear his cat snoring into the microphone.
Please, I hope this happens.
I am trying to keep my arm very still so he does fall asleep faster.
Okay, good. Yeah, I wonder if the talking is a problem, though.
I've had to push away my Maine Coon a couple of times. He keeps coming up and meowing at me, and I've had to mute myself several times. He's now just kind of
don't mute yourself.
Oh, he's coming. He heard me talking about him. Shit.
If you know anything about Dungeon Damsel, you know that I have cat breaks and cats are almost a requirement.
I have seen a couple of your videos and I have seen the kitties. So,
good. Good.
I've been joining Mizrim from Tactical Ventures, the guys that make Solasta. Been joining his dev streams and watching him play and talk about the game. Of course, he's in the French time zone, whatever time zone that is, and I just spam him like, show us the cat, just show us the cat. Nothing else, just show us the cat.
Yeah, I don't really care about this game so much as your kitties.
Just give us the cat, man. So this is the Grumpy Cat Masters, and we're talking about cats.
Yeah. Apparently so.
This is the Grumpy Cat Masters.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you will find our podcast often goes off on a tangent about wrestling or cats or something else.
Well, yeah, might as
not
well.
Complaining.
We're all human beings who have all kinds of interests.
Yep. We all love cats.
True. That seems to be the case here. Yes,
I don't trust him. He doesn't like cats.
As you shouldn't.
I understand that perspective for sure. I was watching something the other day. It was about Crimson Desert because I just started playing that game because you can totally you can get an army of cats.
And you give them armor and
battle cat.
I was just starting the game and I was like, okay, now how do I tame cats? So I went and looked up how to tame pets in Crimson Desert. And the first thing this guy says in this video is like, I hate cats. And I'm like, okay, bye. Not watching. Dislike. I came here to build a cat army and you don't like cats. Get out of here.
Oh, man. Start.
Yeah, so does Driscara have anything about cats? Is there a way to collect cats or something?
Can that be a stretch goal?
Yeah.
Yes. That should be a stretch goal.
Yes. Fine.
All right. I have contributed.
Fantastic.
Oh, is that what I see on the backer train right now? Did one of you guys just do something?
Maybe.
No, maybe not. Maybe. That's right. Yeah, so we're.
Sounds like multiple people want cats then.
No,
yeah. Yeah, 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 they heard us like talking it. For some reason. I don't know how, but they did. Magic.
It's going to show up in the Discord.
Where's my cats?
We want cat.
All right. Are we to the grumpy Dungeon Master story?
Well, no, let's give a. I did hear there was maybe, you know, a future project after Draskara.
Oh, yeah. That's true. We, let's do it.
All right.
Yeah,
so,
tell us, Zane.
Yeah. Super dark. It is
super.
It's a double entendre because it's super dark and it's superhero dark.
Shadow dark, you mean?
Yeah.
Superhero shadow.
Yeah. Superhero shadow dark and very dark. So I've always loved superhero stuff. One of my earlier games that I learned was actually Champions, which is completely crunchy, crazy superhero. Mm-hmm. Role-playing game, but it's very thorough, but at the same time, I never tried to run it because I was kind of overwhelmed by the rules required to run
it. It's pretty intimidating.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the number of phases in every round, I mean, it looked like it would take 2 hours to play one round.
I have to be honest, I was intimidated when I got into character creation. I just was like, and I quit. I couldn't do it. I just can't do it. Someone needs to make my character for me.
Yeah, when you have to develop a separate program back even in the 80s to keep track of all the bullshit that goes into making a character, you know you're in a complicated, crunchy-ass system.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So this is nice and simple, just like Shadowdark, but it still allows you to customize your superhero. It still gives you, you know, all the options that you would expect from a superhero game, but nice and easy. And so far, everybody who's played it absolutely loves it. Bunny has already had her favorite ever session playing Super Dark as we've been testing it. I mean, that's impressive. Best ever.
Which one? I like both of them.
Yeah,
I like
it's true.
Both of the things I did.
Yeah,
but
love Tommy Treetop.
I do love Tommy Treetop. He's strong and he throws things and punches doors and smashes people like bugs by accident and, you know, oops.
So I would say that another way to look at it is that they're all glass cannons. So you walk around doing incredible damage and everybody has like 3 or 4 hit points. So you're just annihilating everything, or you're getting annihilated. So because you are also low on your hit points. So that's what's been really fun. I mean, Tommy Treetop tells two heroes to get in the car and then throws the car from the parking garage to the high rise building across the street. And you know, it was very easy for them to die, but for some reason you rolled enough that you didn't kill both of your hero teammates. But you know, crazy fun. What's the term I want to use here? It's questionable decisions encouraged.
I like that.
That's good. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
go ahead, Chris.
So they have superpowers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So is the entire spectrum of like supervision kind of like off the table since it's like the Shadow Dark setting? Like infravision and X-ray
vision? Yeah. We have to maintain that. Like, you know, that is a very core element of Shadow Dark. So maybe I should step all the way back to, I was in the video game industry as a producer for 20 plus years.
Okay.
And in that job, my goal was, we were a company for hire. So my goal was to be the vision holder for whatever the license was. We were mostly doing license titles. So I'm making maybe a Family Guy game, or I'm making a game for the movie Iron Man 2, or even a Leisure Suit Larry game and Dora the Explorer. Like all across the board, right? So what I got good at was holding that vision for that particular license and knowing this fits in the license, this does not fit in the license. And so when it came to making stuff for Shadow Dark, learning what fits into the ethos was probably the longest period of time. I had to figure that out. And I had a great mentor who was kind of an expert in Shadow Dark Ethos who helped me. Now it's very easy for me to go, yes, that fits Shadow Dark. No, that does not. And all the way down to the writing, like it's very important to keep that very succinct writing, because one of the wonderful parts of that is that you can just read one sentence in the middle of the game and go, oh, I know what this does. Bam. And now we're back to gameplay, instead of having to read a whole page worth of stuff and try to figure out what the author intended. So it's very, very, very important to me to adhere to that Shadow Dark ethos while still creating this, you know, kind of new thing. And yeah. So the superpowers work in the same way with the level advancement chart of rolling your 2d6 when you gain a level, and also giving people the ability to choose their powers and then being able to still do the level advancement chart and have it all work. And so far, so good. Everybody who has played it, who has advanced levels, really loves it. We've been working on it for about a year, I'd say. And I'm extremely excited about it.
I am very curious to see this once you guys get it to that point of release. I love superhero role-playing games. I've played a lot of them over the years. I used to run Marvel every few days back in the 90s. The problem that I've always found is a balance issue. And I'm not huge on balance. Sure. I play a lot of dungeon crawl classics, but you do need at least a little bit of balance.
Yeah.
And most superhero games just do not have that. You're going to have some dude who wants to play Hawkeye, and then you're going to have some other guy who's playing the Hulk. It's Chris. But so balance is always a very difficult issue, especially with superhero games. From what it sounds like, at least, if nobody has any hit points, I don't think balance is too much of an issue. Like if everybody just can right. be killed, then okay.
Yeah, exactly. Because now you've got to be careful about everything you do, or the opposite of that. Don't be careful at all and be crazy and insane and have about three characters ready to go in case something happens.
Go out in multiple blazes of glory.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I love these games that tend to be rules light with low hit points. Like I ran Pirate Borg yesterday for the first time, an hour and a half in. Mind you, I have never read the rule book for Pirate Borg, and I was able to run it just fine. I didn't prep to read the adventure. I just grabbed one in the book and ran it. Like that, the simplicity of it is fantastic. I've played three games of it ever at GaryCon. So if you've not tried it, and I know you guys said you just picked up the book, but it's well worth it. But yeah, an hour and a half into the game, a character just dies. So those games are great risk, great reward, and just so much fun.
Yeah. It's the way to do it. I don't know. I'm a hero forever. Nothing can ever hurt me is not the way that I can play a game anymore. Like I don't want that, because I think that the true hero is the one who puts their lives on the line, who can actually die and save their party members or the distressed damsel or whatever, as opposed to I can just do anything and I'm never gonna die.
Yeah, there's a time and a place for both, but everybody's going to have their preference as to what they want to play. Like there's no right or wrong, but as I've gotten older, I tend to prefer the let's just go for broke and make a bunch of characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was telling you what my preference was. Everybody, of course, can have their own thing, whatever they like, but man, for me, it's the... Yeah. Because I want to feel a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I want to be like, oh no, okay, we got to be careful here. Or, oh no, this die roll is everything. Here we go. You know, and roll it and see what happens. Like those are great moments.
Yeah, I think some of y'all don't kill enough people in fifth edition.
That's where the fun is in those moments of where everything is on the line, where you could easily die in this situation, but overcoming it feels great because you know how precarious your life is.
Right. Yeah, and I my job as a DM is to make sure people feel like that as often as possible. I want there to be every session where someone goes at some point in the game and they look at their other players and they go, "Guys, this is going to be a TPK." Like anytime that happens, I'm like, "Win." Because whether it happens or not, they feel like, "Uh-oh, they're in trouble."
Yeah.
Yeah. I strive for that, and I pride myself in achieving that on a weekly basis.
Yep, exactly. Fantastic. We're on the same page.
Except he does it in 5th edition somehow.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
Like, I think the podcast after this, we'll talk about it, but like, yeah, I run Adventures League for...
It's not called that anymore, is it?
Until June. It's still called Adventures League until June. Okay. So I run Adventures League for my LGS, and I had set up the encounters for the finale for the campaign we've been running for a couple months now. And both separate tables were like, "Oh shit, we're going to TPK." So I had a little bit of extra joy coming out of that. It wasn't too hard. Only one person from each table died at the end. So I knew I did it just right. You know, They thought they were all going to TPK. They didn't. Only one person died heroically sacrificing themselves. Nice. You know, so I was happy with that.
Yeah, that's a good game.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, now we should probably get to the grumpy stories. We've been chatting for about an hour. I'm pretty sure I could go on for quite a bit because you threw this bomb at the very end that you work for the video game industry, which I did not know at all. And I could probably go on for about an hour just for that. But yeah, we definitely need to get your grumpiest stories. And like I said, it could be your grumpiest game master stories or just your grumpiest story as a player. And it can't be about this bug that bites you and you have a Groundhog Day.
Cause that's a great time,
but that's not what I wasn't going to complain about that. My grumpy story was back in the day when I was not with Zane. My ex was running a game online and well, I don't know what happened, but he ended up getting really drunk and he kept forgetting where we were, what we were doing, even though we kept reminding him like over and over again. And, I don't even want to go into details, but that's a very grumpy story for me.
I bet.
And he was so bad that, and I'm not with it, obviously not with this person anymore. He was so bad that he just wandered off outside to to vomit.
Oh no!
Like, and I was just like, oh my god, and we couldn't get anywhere with this guy. It was like 2 hours of not getting anywhere. Like, I don't understand what happened. Like, I don't know why you drank. Like, yes, it's fun. Be inebriated, have fun, enjoy. But it's like, if you can't function as a human being, like, don't do it.
And he was if you're running the game for people, then
it was rough.
You've let down everyone that you told to be there.
Yeah, have a and beer he was belligerent, or two, maybe like running a game, but my God, don't get too drunk. You can't even do it.
I've run games of Drunks and Dragons, but I wasn't drinking.
That's funny.
Like I was the sober person. So, yeah.
Like I said, at GaryCon, I had to run a bunch of games, play a bunch of games. I didn't touch drinks until the final night, you know, and then I got hammered, you know. Like, there's a time and a place for all this,
right?
And there's one more story. It's more lighthearted.
Go for it.
We were at Gen Con for the first time and there was, you know, a Harry Potter game and I was a big fan of Harry Potter and we, you know, get there and we're so excited, but it's just like this DM there is a dud. And I was just like, ugh. It just sucked because it's a magical world of Harry Potter and you couldn't be not boring. Like, I don't know. I'm just tell a story. Gone. Be exciting. Like, this is Gen Con. Yeah, that's all. And he was supposed to be representing like he's like one of many DMs for like this group of Harry Potter, I don't even know what's, but yeah, it was disappointing. I guess it's not very grumpy, but it was very disappointing.
It's grumpy.
Oh, it's definitely grumpy.
It's kind of grumpy.
You basically waste your time at showing a game but that it was you did fun. Not enjoy. So that's grumpy.
I mean, I had a game this last GaryCon where I left with an hour and a half left in the game.
Oh my god! So why?
I have to do that.
I didn't want to do it, but it was not good. It was a game of Castles and Crusades, which, if you're familiar with, runs a little bit like third edition. So it's kind of number crunchy and all. And yeah. I'd been wanting to try it, but the problem was there were 9 people in the game.
Jeez Louise.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just taking so long to get anything done. Plus, the game master was completely unfocused, you know, so there was a lot of rambling and a lot of not. He wasn't doing it's your turn. What are you doing? It's your turn. What are you doing? With 9 people, you have to do that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I think with 9 people, that's very difficult to do that, actually. Like, I can't even imagine.
It's difficult to do that.
Yeah, Chris runs like 16 people or some shit at his store. I don't know.
I'll say that Shadow Dark does lend itself to doing that, especially just if you're doing in crawling rounds or if you're in combat rounds, you're just going around the table, just keep going around the table. Like, people have to be on the ball. I mean, obviously, you have drunk people at the table sometimes, but otherwise, they're typically like, oh, it's my turn. Oh, yeah, what am I doing? Okay, I'm doing the thing. But, man, but most systems, 9 players is just too much. I've had to do that. I've had to do that way too many times because I have a problem with saying no to people who want to play in my games. But eventually, it's like, okay, if so-and-so drops, I don't want to add anybody. And of course, 3 months later, 2 more people come. but, you know... Zane, what do you got for Grumpy Story?
Oh boy, I've been thinking about it. I'm so glad she went first. And
he's not an angry person.
She did 2 things. Yeah, because every...
You don't have to be angry to be grumpy.
Yeah, angry are very different.
Sure, yeah. but you know, every...
He's not negative, that's the whole problem.
Yeah, exactly. Every challenge that's presented to me is an opportunity to overcome. So... I don't look at something and go, yuck, you know, this is not good. And yet I could say that the only thing that I really strive hard to avoid is having players who don't role play. Okay. That would be my grumpy, right? Okay. If we're all sitting around and we're just going, okay, I pull out my sword and I attack the guy, and then, you know, and it's just a like a war game.
Yeah, you're board gaming at that point.
Yeah, if we're just board gaming, then, you know, that's a problem. But see, again, I have a system. I have a way to do it to encourage the role playing. I say, you know, you don't get a luck token unless you're using a character voice or you're making choices that only your character would make. That may not be the best tactical choices, but that's what your character would do. Every time you do something like that, I'm more likely to give you a luck token. So I really put everybody in the mood that, oh my gosh, I've got to use a voice, I've got to do all this stuff. And it breaks people out of their shells, and I really enjoy that. So
That's smart. I mean, I whenever I have trouble getting into character, I try to get into character with a voice. Like if I'm playing you know, like in Christian's Shadow Dark game, where I, you know, randomly kind of rolled up my character like you do in Shadow Dark, and I ended up playing a priest, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go with Odin because I'm gonna be a lawful priest, and you know, I usually slip out of it if I'm not really feeling it, but you know, trying to actually talk with like an accent, just like in the voice of the character, helps you get into character.
Yeah.
Like there's especially something... it's true like when you're playing a bunch of pirates and pirate port.
That's perfect.
That's great.
She made a video about using voices and how we did some research on it, and there's a name for it now that I don't remember what it is, but it's like it rewires your brain. As soon as you start using a voice, for whatever reason, your brain provides different ways of thinking. Like it gives you new words that you wouldn't normally use. It gives you...
It clicks that you're improvising, that you're acting. It's not a guy that has some stats.
Yeah, but there's a scientific thing that happens, right? And I don't know what the scientific thing is anymore, but there's a thing that it just naturally occurs. So if you are nervous about role-playing your character, then try some sort of stupid voice. It doesn't even matter what voice it is, because you'll find that it's way easier when you use one than when you don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I just, this is a side story here. I went out to my anniversary dinner with my wife, and I had to bring our daughter because, you know, no babysitter. And halfway through the dinner, for some reason, she started talking in this most, like, romanticized Southern accent, like Dolly Parton. Like, hey, y'all, wow. How y'all doing? And I was like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm just playing my Southern goblin. What? She's like, yeah, I'm just being me. I'm just being great. I got my little steak hands. Like, she put her hands in her shirt. It's like, I have my little steak hands on, and I want to eat some steak. And I'm just like, I
would marry her if you weren't already married. Like if you weren't married to her, you should marry her.
Well, it is the South. I think that is allowed.
Wait. I thought you said it was your wife. My bad. No, it was my daughter. Oh my god.
Yeah, I was confused too.
Erase that. Cut that.
I did too. Don't worry, I actually thought.
I'm so sorry.
He got too. Oh my god.
I was sure it was your wife.
I don't condone whatever I just said because I said it by accident.
That's on the internet forever.
All right.
Live broadcast. Sorry.
I'm in big trouble.
It's all right. He's in Charleston. It's fine.
Oh my god. I feel so embarrassed now. I totally thought you were talking about your wife. I thought you said your wife just pulls out this Southern accent. I'm like, I'd marry her.
I did too.
Yeah.
Well, your daughter's awesome. Don't marry her. That's bad.
No, the best part is I took her to the bookstore right afterwards, and she was doing it. And I was like, okay, sweetie, you've been doing it a little too much now. Tone it down a little bit. And she's like, buy me a book. Never. And I will. And I was like,
oh,
I see.
Not just a negotiator, but like a
master negotiator. Let's go.
Nice.
You've created a monster.
Actually, amazing. You created a monster.
I did. Honestly, I kind of want to stretch the tell us your grumpiest DM story to your gaming work as well. But since you said you're not a negative person and everything is a learning opportunity, you probably don't have any off the top of your head.
any what? Now I missed the
grumpy stories about your time as the working in the video game industry.
Well, that I have more grumpy stories about that, I would say. Okay. Boy, let me just think about it for a second, because I haven't been in that world in a while, so let me think it through.
His boss was the grumpy story. The entire boss grumpy story.
I mean, whose bosses aren't?
Right, I know. Right. So I would say that the grumpy story is this. When you are given a project, let's say it's the Family Guy game, you are not given carte blanche to do whatever you want. You are not given a massive budget and unlimited time. You are given a, hey, this has to be out by the beginning of the season. This has to, you know, this is your budget, and this is the number of people that you have, essentially, and good luck. And then reviewers go, this game is crap. This game is horrible because it's compared to the you know, the 500 member team blockbuster game, AAA, you know, that was just blah, blah, blah. So of course, all of our games were poorly reviewed because they never looked at it from the perspective of the reality of the limitations of what we're doing, which is probably why, you know, licensed games died out, because, you know, they just couldn't stand up to these heavy hitter AAA titles. But still, it was always frustrating, because, you know, this team would put in all this time and all this effort, and we'd rack our brains, and we were really, really good at having very short schedules and very little whatever, you know, resources, and we could just pound out some amazing stuff because we got really good at doing that. And so to us, it was amazing, but, you know, compared to the AAA title X, Y, and Z, it's not that.
I kind of also feel like the landscape for that has changed a little bit too, more so now than probably the past decade, with all with like the rise of indie games and indie development and the whole indie market on Steam. Like, there's some amazing games now that are just 4 or 5 person teams.
For sure.
Like, me and Jay play 7 Days to Die a lot. Like, that was just the best game ever, and they just got acquired. So now we're like, oh no, go back to the indie team. I just want the five guys working on it forever. Right. I don't care that it's never been going to be released officially.
Right. But yeah, but added to that, I mean, that's a great concept. Whereas you have Family Guy, what are you going to make out of Family Guy? Like, it's very, a fun anecdote about that. It was through Take Two, which became something else. 2K Games, right?
Yeah.
So I think they were just having their name changed at that time, and the CEO, I think, was a French guy. And I don't remember his name, and he came to our office in Chicago, and he sat down, and we showed him what we were working on, and we turned off the projector, and he turned to all of us and says, "Yes, but why do I want to play as some big fat guy?"
Oh my gosh,
that's great. Because that's the main character of the show.
Please tell me you all just like laughed in his face. We're just didn't just.
I
sit
don't
there
think
horrified.
So. I think everyone was terrified at that moment because, you know, that's the CEO, the guy that's going to cancel the project and lay everybody off. So we couldn't do that.
Oh my god.
He's a big fat guy. That's just that's
Peter fucking Griffin. What do you think? Oh my god. Man, Peter Griffin.
Are you glad to be out of the gaming industry now and just working on tabletop?
Oh yeah, 100% out. So much so that I don't know what's going on in it anymore. Like, I don't pay any attention.
It's a good place to be.
That's a good place to be, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. Okay, so I enjoyed working with big, large, you know, for us, large teams was like 50 people. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed coordinating that. You know, I was a producer, so my job was pretty much figure out what had to be done and how long it was going to take to do what we needed to do. So that was awesome. And I would say that, you know, in the... my favorite games, even as a kid growing up, was the group games. Like, the, we're going to all play, Warcraft 2, where we're playing 4 versus 4 and we're a team and we're trying to figure out how to beat the other four. Well, essentially making a video game was playing a video game called, "Hey, let's make a video game." So for me, coming to work every day was playing a game and making sure that we got it done right and all this stuff. It was awesome, really. I don't even know where I was going with all that, but I definitely enjoyed it and got a lot out of it. Oh, I know where I was going. So now it's making games with two people and freelance artists. And that's a completely different world where, you know, when you have a 50-man team, each individual is a tiny cog compared to, oh, I've got to think of everything. this is all on me, and it's all on me and Bunny, and that's it. So that's fun, boy, did I learn a lot from the video game industry of what works and what doesn't, and really still applying that every single day.
That's good.
Excellent. Very cool.
So, Buddy, how is YouTube life for you? I guess for both of you, but being the face of a YouTube channel.
I mean, it's... I don't know. Fine. I mean, people know me. People know me. People will always be like, "Hey, it's Dungeon Damsel." I'm like, "How do you know me? YouTube." I'm like, "Oh, farts. I didn't know." I'm kind of getting used to being known. Like, I mean, I don't think I'll ever be used to that, but yeah. It's interesting being a face. I mean, I always have to try and look pretty. But, you know, other than that, it's fine.
Yeah, she puts a lot of pressure on herself to look.
I do. A lot of pressure on myself.
Yeah. It's fine. And so the YouTube channel, has really taken a back seat to all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Unfortunately, we've kind of been skirting our duties with the YouTube channel, but it's all necessary to focus on this project.
When it becomes a duty, that kind of, you know, kills some of the fun of it. Like, but I hope people also recognize like your contributions to the projects as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That's good. But I enjoy the cats and the songs.
Yeah, I do enjoy this. I do love doing that.
Yeah, okay. She's a talent. Like, she's a talented voice in all ways. Probably my favorite characters in all my games are hers, because she does these incredible voices. She's hilarious. I mean, she has everybody laughing all the time because she totally goes into being the character. And then you hear it in her voice when she's singing. It's all, it's fun.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
No, hope to play with you guys at GaryCon sometime.
Yeah.
And I definitely hope to have you guys back on whenever Superdark comes to BackerKit.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
So why don't you guys do your final pitches for the websites and whatever you want to plug, and we'll call it a wrap.
I don't know. Buy my book, Subliminal Messaging. Yeah, buy my book. I don't know.
That's a good song. I like it.
Supporting us is supporting real life people, artists, writers, designers, and
I'm gonna play off that.
Stuff like that.
That's good, because we, I think, are the only third party Shadow Dark creators, I think, that are supporting ourselves through this 100%. So we are
maybe that might be true. I mean, a lot of people have their day job, and this is our day job, night job, side job.
Man, that's the dream, right?
Up job, bottom job.
Right. And so that's pretty neat and
stressful.
But that Shadow Dark is big enough to allow us to support ourselves by being a third party developer.
That's really cool.
And that's awesome. It's awesome that it got to that point within such a short period of time.
Yeah, it really is.
It also speaks to the quality of, you know, your guys' content, what you're putting out.
Thank you.
That and the quality of Shadow Dark and the quality of the community.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they really are amazing. They embrace so many things, and it's really wonderful to see.
Yeah,
that gives me a question I got to ask. But the final question: when does the Family Guy Shadow Dark setting come out?
That's Shut just up. One example of many.
God damn it,
Chris! Am I hearing that was the Mercer top 10? Is that what it is?
Oh my god!
No,
we'll explain that after we go off the air. All right, well, I guess that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you for joining us, guys. We really appreciated it. It was fun talking with you.
It's been great talking.
It was great. Thanks for... I mean, if you need it, it's druscara.com. That'll just take you to our backer kit. So
there you go. Yeah, that's... not Kickstarter.
No,
heck no. Kickstarter will not bring you where you need to be.
Yeah, but we always point our domains toward whatever we're doing. So druscara.com will go toward the backer kit campaign right now.
You guys heading out to any cons or running anything at any cons anytime soon?
Yeah, North Texas.
North Texas is next for us.
Okay.
I don't know what else.
And it'll be our first time there. We're going to go to Egg also.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've been meaning to go to that. It's just so close to
It's so far. Con
and so far away.
Yeah.
Well, GaryCon is in the same area.
We got it. They're from Atlanta. I'm from Charleston. So that's a heck of a flight up there. Yeah. Just to play games. So doing it back to back.
We drive, and we drive from southern Mississippi.
Oof. Oh, okay. I'm in Alabama, so I drove to GaryCon last year.
Yeah, we're just a bunch of Southerners.
Where about in Alabama? Are you north or south?
I am middle. I'm east of Birmingham.
I was going to say, if you're in Mobile, we're going to come say hi
to
you.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we might be able to make something happen. So anyway, we'll chat about it offline.
No, let's just keep doing it here.
What's your street address?
The location of where you
so
live.
Where do you live again?
My social security number is.
Yes, hold on. Let me get a pen and paper. Hold on. And your credit card. Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what we really need.
All right. That's it. We're out of here. Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
Heck you, Craig.
Still here.
This interaction failed.